I didn't know that's what SPIF standed for.
Yeah.
I knew what SPIF was. Sales Performance Incentive Fund.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You heard it here first. I'm going to clip that. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does. Today I'm joined by my best friend, the sales manager. Tom, how you doing?
Yeah, really good, bye, are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you. A little icebreaker before we get into it. What did you want to be growing up?
What did I want to be growing up? Do you know what? I always wanted to be a football player.
Okay.
I always wanted to be a football player, but I'm 6 foot and about 110 kilos. So that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
So I remember at the time, I was probably about 12. My football coach was like, this ain't for you. This is not right for you. So I started to play rugby.
Okay.
That was my dream. I got to like a decent level, but that was always my dream as a kid, like professional sport.
Professional sport. And what do you prefer, football or rugby?
To watch football, to play rugby.
All right, nice. Yeah. Rugby is not for me. My face,
no?
My face too pretty. Your face is too pretty as well.
I was going to say, what are you saying?
Yeah, your face is too pretty as well, but you know, my face too pretty. No, I'm joking. But yeah, let's get into it. So you're a sales manager now. You've mentioned that you got to a decent standard in rugby. Just briefly walk us through how you've gotten to this point.
Yeah, 100%. So I am... Like I said, I used to play decent standard rugby. I was in the Saracens Rugby Academy, who are a Premier League Premiership team. I think over the years, I've always had like that story. I got injured, you know. But I think the more I grow up now, I can realise that I probably wasn't good enough really to make it. So I jumped out of playing rugby. First job I got was in a recruitment agency, working for a technology recruitment company, going out and finding businesses that were interested in recruiting salespeople.
Yeah.
I did that for about 5 years. Tough job that was. Yeah, tough job recruitment.
Recruitment is crazy. Yeah. But 5 years is a good go.
Five years was tough. It was it's a tough slog. For what I do today, though, as a sales manager, it's taught me so much. It's taught me so much about how to be a good salesperson. Ultimately, in recruitment, because there are so many recruitment companies, it's you that differentiates, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like there's 100 different recruitment companies out there. How do you make your company relevant to the company that you're trying to work with? And it's about you and how you kind of come across as a salesperson. So I did that for 5 years, slogged it out. But some great learnings. And then I actually was recruiting for the role that I'm in today, basically.
Oh, really?
So Yopa were a client of mine. I was speaking to the old GM. It just felt like a good time. Had a good conversation with the GM at the time and ended up making the switch.
So did you transition from recruitment straight into sales management, or did you do some sales first?
Yeah, good question. So I went from being a recruiter into an individual contributor as an AE at Yopo. So I started off selling the platform. Did that for about 4 years in various different roles, ranging from SMB, mid-market, enterprise. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 years ago, transitioned into sales leadership, which is kind of where I am today, yeah.
Nice. And where you are today as a manager of a team, I like to get an understanding as to kind of the day-to-day going. So if you could describe like a typical day or a typical week, what happens in the life of a sales manager?
Yeah, 100%. So I'd say it's like pretty split evenly between probably about four or five different things. The first is meeting with a team. I think that's one of the most important things that I can do as a sales manager is being a people-focused leader, looking after my team, one-on-ones, strategizing with deals, whether it be a tough client, a tough competitive situation. How can we kind of problem solve together? So that's one. The second is client calls. That's the stuff I probably miss the most actually about being a salesperson. But I try and join at least two or three of each of my sellers calls a week.
Oh, wow.
Keep my kind of finger on the pulse as to how the platform's being received by customers, but also just seeing how the team are doing in the real world. Mm-hmm. The other components are much more, I guess, strategic. So understanding a little bit more about data analytics, how's the team performing, where are areas that I can kind of step in and provide some additional help, whether that be, it looks like the win rate's going down, it looks like we're seeing a bit of a drop in demand, how do we pick it up? The last piece, and probably one of my favorite parts of the job is kind of coaching and development. Weekly training sessions with the team, helping them whether it progress with kind of soft skills from a sales perspective, mm-hmm. or look at things a little bit more from an ecosystem perspective.
Yeah. And like one of the main questions I wanted to ask when getting you on today, would you say the main differences between being an individual contributor and a manager? I know you've touched upon not doing the calls, I suppose, as much.
Yeah. So I think the biggest difference is just like the focus of your work. As an individual contributor, your focus and all of your effort goes into getting yourself as a salesperson to your goal, whether that's on a monthly, quarterly, or annual basis. That's your focus. Mm. As a sales manager, you have to step back a bit. You have to trust your team. That obviously, as a sales manager, I've got 7 people on my team, right? And they've got 7 different targets. Some more senior, some more recent hires. You have to trust that they're going to get that done and not think about individual targets too much. Mm. And try and think of ways that you can kind of push and develop those people. I guess it's a simple answer, right? But going from being an individual contributor, looking at just your target, to thinking about 7 people's targets and mm-hmm. 7 people's journeys to get to those targets. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest difference, yeah.
And what do you prefer? Do you prefer managing 7 people's targets, or would you prefer, all right, like you back yourself, obviously, you know, you deliver, you're good. But now, like, if 2 of those 7 don't deliver, that's also on you. What is it, different kind of pressure, and do you prefer it or not?
It's definitely a different kind of pressure. I 100% prefer it. I'd been doing the role at Yotpo for 4 years as an individual contributor. And towards the end of that tenure, I was doing really well. I was providing all of the things that my family were looking for, nice holidays, a house and things like that. But there was something missing for me. And I kind of went back with my old VP, a guy called Jamie, and had a little thought about like what can we do to kind of get the excitement back for the role. Mm. And we kind of arced a little bit back to my rugby playing days. I was the captain of my rugby club, and mm-hmm. that for me, I was never the best in my position, but that was why I progressed in rugby, right? Because I was a good leader. So that for me is the was the reason that I kind of wanted to jump into sales leadership. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I definitely prefer the job as it is today as a sales leader.
In terms of, you know, like you said, you manage 7 people, how do you keep them all motivated?
Yeah, it's a good question. I am over like the last couple of years, I've really started to think about, can you motivate someone that's not motivated? I really believe that you either have motivation or you don't. And obviously people go through peaks and troughs of being really motivated for they've got a wedding coming up, or being really motivated because they need to buy a house. But if you don't have that core motivation, it's very hard to not motivate people. And that for me is one of the biggest things that I look for when I'm trying to hire a new salesperson into my team. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to identify, but that's something that I really do try and identify within a salesperson. There are a couple of kind of industry things that we do to keep people motivated. Obviously, you've got your commission plans as a salesperson. Yeah. That obviously keeps you motivated, knowing if you get to your goal, you're going to bring in a really good amount of money. But we also have, I guess, things on a monthly or quarterly basis. We call them in the industry SPIFs, Sales Performance Incentives Funds. It's basically if you get to X or do Y within a specific time frame, you'll get A, B or C benefit. But yeah, I really do think that motivation is something you can't teach in someone, and you can't give them anything to try and push them to be motivated. They've either got it or they haven't.
Amazing answer. First of all, I didn't know that's what SPIF standed for.
Yeah.
I just knew, what SPIF was. Sales Performance Incentive Fund.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You heard it here first. I'm going to clip that. And then the second thing, you mentioned that motivation has to come from within. Like, what is it that you see within somebody? Because I know that I've had recruiters on the podcast previously,
yeah,
and it's like, yeah, like you need to be bragging about wanting the most expensive car and this and that. But I feel like that's not the kind of thing you're actually looking for in a salesperson.
100%. And I think, to be honest, that's like one of the misconceptions of a salesperson, is they have to be this crazy outgoing person wanting the flash car, wanting the flash house. And look, that can work. But something that I've identified is that that's not always the thing that makes super successful salespeople, is that really outgoing person. So I think identifying motivation is a really difficult one, especially during an interview stage. One of the things that's always worked for me in the past is putting people through a really solid interview process. So being very, very transparent at the start of the interview, even at stage one, that look, there's going to be three stages in this interview. There's a first step with me. There's going to be a second step with me and someone else. And the third step is going to be a presentation. Mm-hmm. And that presentation stage is typically where we can really identify if someone's got that work ethic that you want, because it's something that not all companies will ask you to do. And at the moment, especially, right, it's an applicant-led market. There's a good amount of jobs out there, and there's not as many good candidates out there. What that means is that if we've got someone that's actually putting some time and effort into the interview process, and particularly that last round of the task, and you can see that they've done a good job, there's some really good preparation, they've actually thought about this, then that's a good indicator for me as to, yeah, this person's going to have a good drive and work ethic.
What happens if they put in a lot of effort, but the effort is misplaced?
Yeah. And again, this is a tricky one, but I really do think that as long as they've put in the effort and it comes from a good place and they've put into the effort, and even if it is misplaced in terms of where they've focused, that's my job as a sales leader to kind of refocus them. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some kind of core competencies that I'm looking for when I'm interviewing someone. But really, if I can get someone that comes in and shows that they're going to work really hard and care about their work, mm-hmm. this is something that I actually think is really, really important in the modern day work, is that people care about the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. Especially with what we do, right? We look after companies that have got big budgets and really important projects that they're trying to work on. And if the person doesn't care about, and the person, I mean the salesperson, doesn't care about the work that they're producing, we're gonna cause problems with the client and ultimately with the business.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about something that I've not talked about before, but something I think isn't covered in enough of job interviews. I think that one of the key things I used to look for whenever I went through a process, or if I was interviewing somebody, is a willingness to learn.
Yeah.
And I think interview processes can be so cutthroat, you don't always get the opportunity to give somebody a chance to learn. It's like, if they mess it up at that time, that's it. I suppose I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. How would we incorporate something like that into an interview process? And do you think it's a good idea?
100%, I think it's a good idea. That's actually number two on my list of competencies, is like a willingness and a desire to learn. And I'll give you a good example. I won't name names here, but one of the best people on my team actually failed that first task. I gave them some really constructive feedback. This is how we can do it better. Let's put some time in next week and let's go again. Next week, absolutely smashed it. And that, for me, I now have got someone that I know is going to work hard because they've taken the time to come back a second time, and someone that is really open and takes on feedback.
That's amazing. Why did you give them that second chance? Because I don't feel like a lot of people get that second chance, and maybe other managers can listen to you and take note.
So I think, and look, I'm sure there'll be situations in the past and also in the future where maybe that second chance doesn't always make sense. But for this person, I saw all of the core competencies and skills that I look for as a sales leader, and I just saw a little bit of a...
They went down the wrong path.
Yeah,
because they went down the wrong path. Yeah.
They were also really nervous. This is the first time that they've ever done a task in an interview process, right? Mm. It's a tough thing. There's two of us. There's me being a sales manager, and at the time, my GM. This was during COVID, so we were in a Zoom call. It was awkward. It was difficult, but it was a really good test, and giving that person that ability to come back and try again, even if it wasn't going to work out. I thought it was going to be worth it for them in the future, even if they didn't end up making it with our company.
Yeah. So the first thing you said, I've totally forgotten. The second thing was a willingness to learn. What are the other core skills you think are required for a salesperson in 2023?
Yeah, so the kind of five things that I look for is, you've obviously got work ethic. Again, it's difficult to look for, but it's really important within a salesperson. You've got that willingness to learn. Me, the rest of my team, my boss, my boss's boss, we're not the perfect puzzle yet. We've still got missing pieces, right? Mm-hmm. So your ability to understand that and be open to feedback and be open to learning is really important.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the third things for me is inquisitive. I guess maybe for the listeners, me and my team sell B2B, right? So we sell to other businesses, and it's a technology platform where we're solving sometimes some quite difficult problems, and being able to really understand the customer, why they're having this conversation, why they're trying to fix that problem, mm-hmm. is makes the rest of the sales process a lot easier for us and the customer.
Mm.
So that for me is really important. The other one for me is organization. I think as an account executive within a modern day tech business, you can be working anything from 5 opportunities if you're an enterprise rep, all the way through to upwards of maybe 40 opportunities as an SMB rep, and that's what my team look after. We're a SMB or small to medium business sales team. So your ability to be able to be super organized within those 40 opportunities and jump from one call to another with all of the knowledge and data that you had on that initial call and you want to bring to that second call, that's what really separates good AEs from like the top AEs that I've seen, is really organized, process-driven salespeople.
Yeah, we've got a couple of really organized and process-driven salespeople in our company, and they do really well. We touched on it before, but just to go back to it, so stereotypes and salespeople. You mentioned the fact that you don't need to be this braggadocious person. What are the top 3 misconceptions about salespeople?
I think that's definitely number one, is that they're these super extroverted characters. They're the life and soul of the party. I've actually seen, and this is actually a big misconception of me. People assume that I'm this, because I'm a big character, that I'm this big outgoing guy. I can be, and that's almost like a bit of an act that I've had to play across some of the years. But I'm definitely quite an introverted person. So I think, and I've seen that in not just me, but in 4 or 5 of the other top salespeople that I've ever worked with in my life, have been some of the most quiet, humble and relaxed people. Mm. I really do believe that those kind of, there's like a bit of a saying in like the sales world of like the lone wolf salesperson, the person that's like really outgoing, doesn't care about the people they're working, and doesn't care about the customer success people that they're passing those deals to, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, they're always going to be around, but they don't last long, because they reach a ceiling. Mm-hmm. There's no way for them to progress, because their manager's not going to want to promote to them to a manager, right? Because they've proved that they can't. They're not interested in that kind of stuff. So that's definitely one of them. I think the second is that the salesperson only cares about money. And I think that is true. That's probably a lot of the reason why people get into sales. That's why I got into sales. That's not why you stay in sales.
Mm.
So I think for someone that's just joined the sales community, that's probably a good reason why they've joined sales, is your ability to accelerate from either not having a job or having low income to high income. the barrier to entry for that is low. Mm-hmm. But in order to stay in sales and be motivated and continue, there has to be something else. And for me, it was problem solving. It was in my current role today, nurturing and developing.
Yeah.
Those are the reasons that kind of kept me in sales. But I'd probably say those are the two things for me. It's the salespeople don't always need to be extroverted, and we're not always chasing a
the bag.
Bill. We're not always chasing the bag.
Yeah. Okay, nice. All right, you're giving me two, and they're good ones. I'm dotting about a bit, but it's just because I've wanted to ask these questions for so long. I think we touched upon the four skills that you look for in a salesperson. Let's say somebody has two of them, they've got three of them. How do you develop each of the skills, and are they things that you can develop, or do they need to come from within somebody?
Yeah, so I think one of the best things about working in a good sales environment where there's a number of you, and it's a bit trickier sometimes at startup businesses where there's only a couple of salespeople in a team, but the size of team that I manage, seven people, and we've got wider sales teams at Yotpo, as you know, it means that you don't need to have the perfect salesperson in every role, because you've got someone over here that's really, really process orientated, that you know that in the next training session you can get, I'm going to make a name up here, but you can get Fred to run a training session on how he runs his process in a sales team. And then you've got Sarah, who's really, really good from a work ethic and drive perspective. So you know that's going to stand out to the team.
Mm-hmm.
So those things, when you've got a good sized team, end up, you've kind of got that kind of pack mentality of like everyone's helping each other out.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how you identify which areas people need to grow and develop in, I've got just a really old school Google Doc that I keep. Got all of my reps in there, everyone in my team, and the skills that I look for that I've mentioned there, and probably about five or six others that are specifically relating to the product that we sell in our ecosystem.
Mm.
And just their journey to kind of being the best that they can in each of those individual skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that then allows me to run training sessions that I know are going to be catered to person A and person B throughout the course of the weeks and the months.
I suppose being a manager, it's not all rosy, right?
Yeah.
There are times where you're going to have difficult conversations with people. And there are times, you know, we've just had a round of tech layoffs. So, you know, as managers, if that's someone in your team, you're going to have those conversations. How do you approach difficult situations and conversations with team members?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think, look, it's obviously very relevant at the moment with, like you say, the tech layoffs that pretty much every business is seeing at the moment. And it's not nice to see. I think one of the things that I really over communicate with my team, whether it be at the start of their journey with me or even consistently throughout, mm-hmm. is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always be as transparent as I physically possibly can be. Mm-hmm. There'll be times where, of course, I can't tell them everything at once, but transparency for me is really, really important. We have a really good culture of feedback at Yotpo. Mm-hmm. Up, down, left, right, being able to give my boss's boss feedback and not feel that I'm putting myself or anyone else out there, I think is really important, which then makes those tough conversations a little bit easier, right? Because you know it's not coming from a bad place. It's about, I'm saying this because I really want you to get better at this, or I'm saying this because something you did there isn't going to help you to get to the goals that you want to get. It's always, as long as you make things very clearly about work and there's never any encroachment into someone's personal life, that for me has always been the way to give feedback and have tough conversations is making it about their career or making it about work. That's the most important thing.
Nice. Okay, switching up the levels a bit, I want you to metaphorically close your eyes, think about all of the best salespeople that you've worked with, or all of the best people that you've worked with, period. What is a skill that is uncommon, right? So I think, you know, everyone will say be organized, be communicative, etc., etc. What is a skill that you don't think enough people look for that you've noticed between all of the best performers that you've worked with?
Yeah. And maybe it's not a skill, and I'll kind of come back to that, one of those things that I mentioned at the start, but it's like it's in someone's nature. The top people that I've ever worked with are incredibly introverted. Mm-hmm. And they almost, when they're jumping on these sales presentations or they're jumping in these meetings with clients face to face or on Zoom, as we do a lot nowadays, right? Is they're putting on a bit of an act, but they're very introverted in their nature. Mm-hmm. They're people that are not the person that you meet at the party that's chugging drinks back down, going crazy, being the life of the party. They're the person that's probably in the back corner of the party having a good, meaningful conversation with someone. But that's definitely one of the things that I've noticed, is that really the top quality people in a sales team are typically the less outgoing. That's not always the truth, and I've seen examples of it the other way around, but that for me is definitely something that coming into sales and coming into sales management specifically, I was a bit surprised by. Mm-hmm. It's just that, yeah, you don't need to be this really outgoing person to be an amazing salesperson. You can be a little bit more relaxed and withdrawn.
Or measured and calculated. Measured. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
measured and calculated. That's amazing. And then it doesn't have to be in sales, but as this is a sales conversation, I think it would be good to be in sales. Is there like an emerging trend that you're seeing in 2023 in salespeople, processes, the way you have to sell to a customer?
Yeah, good question. I guess I'd be remiss not to bring up AI in this example, right? Mm. Like the reality is my team is using ChatGPT, Google Bard in many different parts of their day-to-day life, whether it be creating email templates to send out to a customer. We had a really cool example of someone on my team, someone sent them an email with an objection saying, hey, we think your platform's great, but ABC. The rep uploaded a couple of internal documents to Google Bard and said, here's the email that we've just received. How would you objection handle it? And we got an amazing email back from Google Bard. Really, really detailed. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
Terminator. Yeah. Oh my God, they're coming for our job.
Mate, they're coming for us.
Bloody hell. I won't ask if it ended in like...
No, it did, yeah. We ended up closing that. We ended up closing that deal.
Wow.
Which was... I'm sure that email wasn't the core reason, but it's just really interesting to see that AI can either reduce time to value, which is something that we talk a lot about in my team, which is we're an SMB business. We need to have high velocity. So how do we speed up the value in getting those opportunities turned around for our customers? Mm-hmm. And AI has been a really good way to do that for a few different tasks, not just emails, but also... organizational skills and things like that.
Yeah. That's actually so sick. Another great answer. You know, it sounds like you love what you do. I don't want to put words in your mouth. A couple of questions. First, what would you say the most rewarding aspect of being a sales manager is?
I definitely do love my job. I think one of the most rewarding parts of my job, I'll kind of give two actually. So the first is seeing your team win. That feeling is honestly, I can't quantify the numbers, but so much nicer than you as an individual contributor getting to your goal. Mm-hmm. It means a lot more. It's nicer to see. It feels great. Mm-hmm. The second thing that's incredibly valuable to me as a sales leader is seeing people progress within the business. Mm. Specifically, people on your team, of course, but of course other people around as a leader within the business. It's nice to see people progress, but people within your team progressing either up vertically in their role, so going from sales to sales manager or going from a junior AE to a senior AE, that's mm-hmm. always nice to see. But something also that I'm actually this is a current situation that I've got at the moment, but I've got someone in my team that's probably one of the best salespeople in my team, and they've been doing it for 5 years, and they're kind of getting towards the end of their excitement for the role. So trying to find that person another role in the business and being part of that journey, even if it's not going to be within my team, knowing that I've been kind of part of that journey, helping them push them to their next levels. That for me is probably the most rewarding part of the job, actually.
Amazing. And then flipping it on its head, what would you say the most stressful aspects of being a sales manager are?
Yeah, I think the reality is that it's the big number that gets whacked on your back at the start of the year, right? It's at that very first January 2 or January 3, whenever you're back in the office after New Year's Day, getting the big number, thinking how you're going to get there, looking at your team, right? Who's gonna really drive it for us this year?
Mm.
That is probably the most stressful period, but it very quickly evaporates when, especially with the team that I've got today, that they're all amazing. They all work so hard. They all have like a true care and passion about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That for me is like the remedy for that stress, is like taking a look at my team, taking a step back, looking at the team, looking at the problem that the market has, the problem that our solution fixes, and that kind of gives me a bit more comfort on that stress point.
And just to add to that, because I know that our team and our business do well, what would your advice be to any manager who is dealing with either an underperforming team or working for a company in an underperforming market?
Yeah. So I think that's the key thing to work out here, right? Let's just imagine your sales manager X at company B, and you're 50% under target for the year. You're walking into, let's call it 2024. What you need to really quickly identify is it the people, or is it processes, or is it the problem? So if it's the people, right, how do we identify within those people the areas that we can grow them, we can develop them?
Mm-hmm.
That's not always an easy thing to do, especially when the reality is if you've got a decent sized team, you can't be on every single people's calls, and you it's a nightmare to be spending all of your hours looking through Salesforce and looking at the emails, right?
Yeah.
There are a couple of tools that we use. One's called Gong, and I know you probably use it on your side. Gives me the ability to look at my team's calls and not need to necessarily be on every single one, but get some real-time insight. So that's probably the first thing. The second one would be to understand if it's a process thing. There are so many amazing companies out there with amazing people and a really, really good solution to their end user that have bad processes in between that basically cause their salespeople to not be able to get to their goals, which means that their team can't get to their goals, whether those processes are administrative, whether they're organizational structures that just don't work. That is often something that I've seen that causes big issues with a team's ability to get to their revenue goals.
Yeah.
And the last one, and this is probably the one that the sales manager is least likely to want to see in their business, if it's a product issue. Ultimately, if you're a business and you're a sales manager, and you've identified it's not your people, it's not the processes, and it actually is a product to market fit, that's the one that's the hardest to help with. Of course, you can work really closely with your product and engineering team, but it's like steering a battleship, right? It takes 2-3 months to get any changes, and 2-3 months out of a 12-month year, and you're done for, right?
Yeah.
So, those are the things that I'd be looking for if I was managing a team that wasn't performing: is processes, people, and the problem or the platform.
Nice. You mentioned Gong.
Yeah.
Are there any other standout tools or platforms that you recommend other sales managers should have as part of the tech stack? Or is it just take what you're given by the company you work for?
That's often how it works, right?
Yeah.
This is what,
like, what should they be lobbying for?
Yeah, I think Gong...
Who should be giving me sponsorship to not bleep their name out on this podcast?
I think Gong is a really, really interesting business. They started off within the call analysis space, which is the ability for me to listen back to a call and get some insights from it. But mm-hmm. they've progressed into deal management and organization tools for salespeople. I think that as a modern day seller, this is going to sound very, very basic, but it's a tool that's so underutilized by salespeople that I've seen. LinkedIn, To kind of give you an insight, I connect with every single person that I ever have an interaction with on Zoom. I've got close to 15,000 connections now on LinkedIn, and time again, I'll get a message three years later after I've spoken to them. Hey Tom, we had a great experience with the team last time. We're looking to do ABC now.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that. It's not a laziness thing, right? It's just people just don't think of the impact that it's going to happen. You live in the moment as a salesperson, yeah. and you're not thinking what's coming in a year's time. But if you really want to progress with it within sales, LinkedIn is an amazing tool. They're the two things for me that I couldn't live without today. Of course, Salesforce, but that's kind of a given. You have to have something like that, right? But yeah, those two for me.
Nice. Customer success.
Who are they?
Sales. I suppose my question is, as a salesperson, you deal with a lot of different stakeholders.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that everybody is aligned in helping you, the sales team, to achieve your objectives of winning the maximum amount of business?
Good question. And just to kind of put a new lens on it, and this is definitely something that as I've moved into sales management that I think about almost more than I think about the sale itself, is how are we gonna look after this customer once they've signed the contract? How are we actually gonna get this customer live? How are we gonna fix that solution? So I think the reality is that what's that phrase that you used?
Sales sell the dream, customer success serve the nightmare. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last time I say that on this podcast.
And I really want to remove that sentiment from all CSMs, right? I want every CSM in the world to, at least that I get the pleasure of working with, to not have that experience of salespeople. Mm. And the only way that you can do that as a salesperson is by checking every single box and not missing gaps, even if the customer is willing to progress forward, not missing gaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I mean by that is having specific sales processes that work for your company. A playbook that works at the company that we both work for, Yotpo, might not work for the company you last worked for, or the company that we work for in 50 years time when we eventually leave Yotpo, right? But having those processes in place to mean that you don't miss gaps within the sales process, and then ultimately don't set customer success up for failure. Mm-hmm. That's probably the one of the most important parts of what I do, is trying to identify if there is a gap that we're missing, how do we cover it? Whether it be a technical gap, whether it be a strategic gap with the customer, they're looking for to achieve X and we can get there, but technically it's going to be a nightmare. How do we identify these things within the process?
Okay, and then just another question. So you've mentioned there making sure there's no gaps. What would your advice be to any sales manager where the salesperson has completed a sale, but post-sale we have identified a gap? How would you, I suppose, rectify that to turn maybe some slightly negative sentiment into a positive outcome?
Yeah. So I think I'll give you two answers. I'll give you how I think about it as a sales manager, and then how I think it should work in reality. Mm-hmm. So I think as a sales manager, I want my team to step back into that every single time. Mm-hmm. It's really important for me that the CSMs that I work with, like you, and also their managers, have a really good experience with me and my team. Mm-hmm. The reason that's important, one, it just means that there's no resentment when there's a client coming across. You're not, oh God, one of Tom's clients coming across here. Mm. And two, I think it's really important for the salesperson to actually understand, right, this is the gap that we've had here. I'm gonna come back in here and try and fix it if we can. If we can't fix it, that's fine, and we'll part ways as a partnership. Hopefully that never has to happen. But the salesperson actually seeing it in real life, this is the problem, this is the gap that I've not seen, and this is the problem that it's caused, is really important, because it means that won't happen again. So yeah, as a sales manager, I want my reps to jump back in every single time, because I think it's really important for their image and my team's image. And from an individual contributor's perspective, I think it's really important that they step back in to see the problem. and actually experience what the customer's experiencing.
Mm. And, you know, just to give my two cents from a customer success standpoint, I think, you know, one of the reasons it's paramount that a customer has, well, we're transparent with a customer and we onboard them in the right way is because it allows us to have that positive sentiment to expand the account,
yep.
Right? If we lose the trust in that onboarding process, when it comes to expanding the account, those conversations are very difficult to have. So I actually think in terms of, you know, net retention, sales numbers, overall revenue of the business, by just bringing in a happy customer, it works out better for us in the long term anyway, which it might sound like, yeah, obviously it does, but sometimes people are so focused on getting that deal in at that time that they don't think about the bigger picture.
Yeah, and something that I try and get my team to really think about actually is when you're a business at the scale that our company is today, of course this would never happen, right? Because we're still in growth mode, we're still driving a ton of net new revenue for the business, which is super exciting. But our business is at the scale today where you could get rid of all the salespeople and we'd still have more money next year from the customers that we already have through growth and expansion, right? And getting the team to really think about that is actually very important because it kind of, one, makes them feel that they're not on a pedestal. I think a lots of companies, salespeople are put on the pedestal. And that's obviously, that's fine in some scenarios where they need to drive the revenue. But the reality is we're not in as buoyant market as we were in 2 years ago, right? Mm. Our business's ability to retain, grow and expand accounts is almost more important than it is to drive net new revenue to the business.
Right, it's true. I've talked a lot about success, what you think makes a good salesperson, etc. What do you think has been the single biggest factor in getting you to where you are today?
Good question. I think if we look at, I'll give you two answers here. I'll give you what I think was my secret sauce as a salesperson. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you like what I think is the reason that I've got to where I am today. As a salesperson, really my secret sauce was in two parts. One, I knew the platform incredibly well. I knew all of the niche use cases. I knew all of the how to fix problem X. I didn't need to go to any of my sales engineering team to get an answer and waste critical time. I just had that information, which I think as a salesperson, it's not always important to have that level of technical knowledge. But I think, so I kind of finished my tenure as an AE at Yotpo in the enterprise team. And I think when you're speaking to these big businesses, giving them confidence in the salesperson that they know these answers and they don't need to lean on other people, I think that's quite confidence inspiring. And the second thing as a salesperson, I think even though I'm quite introverted as a personality type outside of the work, I think that my ability to build a relationship with someone within a very short period of time, so we call them introductory calls, right? It's that first meeting between the two businesses. That was my secret sauce. I'd always get someone smiling and always make sure that by the next call we were starting off where we left off. That for me was my secret sauce as a salesperson. As a sales manager, it's an easy one for me. It sounds a bit cringe to say, right? But I really do believe that I'm a people-focused leader. And what I mean by that is I think that by looking after the people that you work with on your team, you get more out of them than if you were super micromanaging. If you were like me, genuinely caring about the guys and girls in my team progressing within the business, what they're up to at the weekend, when they're getting married, how are things going? All of those things really add up to me being able to get that 5 or 10% extra out of them because they're like, right, Tom needs this from me by the end of the week. I'm going to get it done. Or we need this revenue for the team. I've got the relationship with Tom that I think that I'm going to make sure that we get it done. I think that for me is really important. And it doesn't come from a place where that's my end goal. It comes from a place that I do genuinely care about the team and the byproduct is that we get the best from them.
I'm just smiling at the answer because I know it's true. I see you live it every day. Productivity.
Yeah.
Any productivity hacks for the listener?
Yeah, good question. So I'm probably like the opposite of the productivity guru. If you look at like my setup, I'm a one screen guy at the office and at home, and that is actually the thing that makes me more productive. I focus on one task.
Yeah.
As an AE, I always had two screens, just because when you're doing a demo on one screen, you show it here and you maybe want to get some other stuff on the other side. But as a sales manager, I try and focus on one task and one task alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that kind of gets me through. The only other thing that's been an absolute game changer for me, there's an email client called Superhuman.
Yeah.
Its sole goal as a business is to get you to zero inbox. That's their goal, is zero inbox. And as a sales manager, you're going to get pinged from 50 plus people a day internally, let alone the external emails that you get. And your ability to respond to those emails in good time with good quality work is a real differentiator.
So what does Superhuman actually do?
It's basically a really clever system built with shortcuts. Okay. But really, really clever shortcuts that are all really intuitive, keyboard friendly, Mac friendly. It lives on your mobile device as well. But it just allows you to respond to people in a more efficient way and manage your inbox way better than your standard Outlook or Gmail.
It sounds like I need a little bit of.
I'll get you a free trial.
Yeah. Oh, you got to pay for it.
I've got to pay for it. Yeah.
Superhuman. Unless you come with the sponsorship money. No. I missed around. Oh, I was going to ask if there are any sales hacks, but I think Superhuman is your sales hack. So that's absolutely fine. As a sales manager, would you say you have a good work-life balance?
Yeah, I do think I have a good work-life balance, and I think that. The more that I grow, I first entered the sales world to earn money. I think I mentioned that at the start, right?
Yeah.
That's why lots of us get into it. But now I've got a partner, two kids, my ability to provide the life that we have today via the work, but also being able to see them, do stuff with them, and not feel like I'm... being dragged away by work is more important to me than earning an extra 50 grand a year, whatever the number is. It's my ability to spend to have the work life balance that I have today is worth more to me than more money, basically.
I'm happy that you touched upon money. As a sales manager, do you feel fairly compensated for what you do?
Yeah, I think definitely where I am today, I definitely feel well compensated. It's a tricky job, and I always, like, whenever I think about, oh, I've had a hard day work, you start to think of, like, have we actually? We're not a nurse, we're not a doctor, right? We're not out there saving the world, but I do work hard every day, and I do drive really good value for the business. So I think for the value that I bring the business, I'm really well compensated.
And I think I heard something. It's probably you that told me. Actually, no, I'm not going to say it. Let's cut in.
That's it.
The best salesperson in the team earns more than the manager.
So that's typically true in like a...
That's not me asking about you, just sales in general.
So that is typically true, that like your best performer, and by a best performer, it can't just be someone that hit their goal. It's like someone that really, really overperforms at 150% of their number.
Mm.
Those types of people will typically earn more than the sales manager.
But they're also the people that get you your commission as well, because they help 100%. The team to hit their target.
Exactly. And the reason for that is the way that the most commission structures work within technology businesses and most businesses in general, right, is that you've got your flat commission rate, which is anything that you earn up to your target, and then anything above your target, whether it's monthly or quarterly, is basically an accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where people start to earn a ton of money.
Okay. We've got a few more questions, and then we get into the quick fire round. You know, you've mentioned that you've got good work-life balance.
Yeah.
You know, you think that you work quite hard. I suppose stepping away from the actual day-to-day of work, how do you unwind?
Yeah, good question. Very recently, I've got into cycling. I started in November. Me and actually pretty much the whole of my team have got a London to Brighton cycling race planned.
I'm going to put the link to donate in the show notes.
Oh, very kind of you, very kind. So yeah, cycling for me is where I unwind. I was thinking about this actually on a cycle ride a couple of days ago. I do all of my really strategic, important thinking while I'm cycling.
Oh, wow.
But I also do all of my no thinking while I'm on the cycling. So if sometimes I'll go out. So specifically for those first, I try and do about 200 kilometers a week on the bike. And for those first 10 kilometers of each journey, I'm thinking about the problem at work, the problem at home. How do I fix this? Whether it be I'm trying to build a playground for the kids in the garden, but the ground isn't level. How am I going to fix that? Or we've got this revenue issue at work that I need to fix. That's where I do a lot of my strategic thinking, that first couple of minutes of the ride. But then after that, when I'm breathing hard, I'm just doing my relaxing. I'm just not thinking about anything. I'm letting myself unwind. And that's been really, really helpful for me. Something else that I wish that I knew. So I always think about this as a dad, as a sales manager, and as a partner. How do you be the best of each of one of those things without letting anything slip?
Mm.
So you could be sometimes like, and this is something that still happens today. I've not perfected it, right? But I can feel like I'm being a really good partner, but then I'm letting something go at work, or I can feel like I'm being a really good dad, but I'm letting something go with my partner. I think one of the things that I'm learning over the last at least year and a half that's making that a lot easier is just being present. And like whatever you're doing, whether it is work or whether it's being with my partner or being with the kids, just being present in that time and not letting the other things cross over. Of course, when you're with your partner, the kids are going to cross over. That's obviously going to happen.
Yeah.
But that for me is something that's really important. Is just making sure that you're present, you're in the moment. And actually, that's one of the big reasons that I stopped drinking alcohol, right? I've not drunk alcohol this year at all. And the main focus is, not that I was a big drinker, right? But let's say we go out for drinks on a Thursday night and I'm getting the kids ready for school in the morning. I'm a bit tired. I'm a bit groggy.
Yeah.
That's not what I want my kids to experience, right? I want my kids to experience me in the moment with nothing affecting me. So that for me, so cycling and not drinking are two of the ways that really allow me to unwind, actually.
If it makes you feel better, I don't have any kids yet, but when I do, I'm going to be tired and groggy no matter. Just having to get up at 6 having to get up at 6 a.m. It don't matter if it was booze or not. I'm just not a morning person.
The kids were up at 5:15 this morning.
Yeah, see.
So,
goodness gracious. I mean, good luck. But I mean, I'm sure it's 10 times worse with a little bit of a hangover, so I completely understand. All right, Tom, so to any people who are listening to this podcast because they potentially, you know, want to start a career in sales or, you know, maybe transition into sales leadership, what would actually, we'll do two questions. For anybody looking to get into sales, what would your advice be for them?
So I think if you're looking for your first role in sales as an individual contributor and you've never worked within sales before, that it's really, really important that you do your research. I think that I see so many people, and as a recruiter, I saw this happen so many times, where actually a really good candidate would join the wrong size company for them. They join a startup or they join a really big company and it just didn't work for them, whether it be from a coaching and development perspective at either one of those companies, they didn't get it, whether they just got the wrong leader. But I think doing your research on the product market fit, so understanding, and of course you're not going to understand if you're from the outside the actual problem that platform solves, but if you do some research, have a look at some of the customers that they've got on their website, that's really important. The second thing is, I think more important probably than the business itself, is finding yourself someone that you know you can learn from. That's something that I think is more important probably than the business that you work for, especially in that first job. The reality is that it's very rare that you're going to join that first company and that's going to be the company for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah.
And it's very rare that you're going to join that company at 10 employees and you grow them to 10,000. Of course, those stories happen, right? But the reality is you go and earn your stripes at a company and then you end up moving somewhere else. But finding a leader, specifically a sales leader or a managing director or a VP that you can really learn from, you can relate to, and you trust is really important. I think the rest will come after that. A good VP, a good sales manager will coach you, will develop you, will get you to where you want to be. And hopefully those good people end up working at good companies. That's something I've always hoped, at least in life.
Nice, nice. And then similar question, but for anybody looking to get into sales leadership, what would your main piece of advice be for them?
I think one of the biggest pieces of advice that I was given by my old VP at the time is sales leadership is, it's one of the most important roles in the organization, specifically in the sales team, because your success and how you look after the team rubs off on your team, and ultimately you're looking after 7 people in your team, and you're trying to progress them in their careers and think of them outside of their offices. They're trying to get married, they're trying to buy a house, they're doing all these exciting things outside of the office, and you're partially responsible for that. Your coaching development is going to get them to those goals that they're trying to achieve, you have a really big amount of sway on how that person or individual contributor gets to the next level. So have a real think about that before you join as a sales leader, because it's not for everyone. Some people make amazing salespeople, but struggle to make it to be amazing sales leader. And I'm not saying I'm amazing sales leader. I think I do a good job for my team, but definitely have a think about, can you put the interests of your team way above your interests? Because I have to do that on a daily basis, right? There'll be times and scenarios where someone comes to me with a problem, and I know that the easiest thing for me, my life, and potentially even my earnings is going to be just to go with option A. But let's have a think about, what does Jenny need? What does Sophie need on that team, on that call, or this problem that she's got, to get her to where she needs to be? So I think that's probably the advice that I'd give is, are you willing to put your team's interests and career aspirations way above yours in certain scenarios?
Okay, there's been so many tidbits from this. And then final question, so obviously, you're a sales manager at the moment. Like you say, you're helping people to progress through their careers. Where do you, Tom, see yourself in the next 5 and 10 years?
It's a good question. Something I'm squeezing my boss on at the moment is trying to pick a place where I want to be. I think for me, I have absolutely loved my and continue to love my career in sales. I want to learn new things about the tech organization, right? I don't want to be, in 5 years' time, Tom that's worked in tech sales and tech sales alone for 10, 12 years. I want to be someone that's trying a few different things out, maybe even try things out that are completely out of my comfort zone. As an example, like this is not something for the short term, right? But understanding how a customer success team works and how that actually works in the day-to-day business, strategy, operational wise, is really interesting to me. So I think for me, I'm really happy with what I'm doing today, but I want some additional variety to it from a progression perspective, not just in terms of title. I'm actually, like, title doesn't interest me at all, really. What you're doing on a day-to-day interests me more than title. And I think having other areas of responsibility that are outside of core sales, that's what's really getting me excited, actually, over the last couple of months.
Yeah, and I suppose my question for you, a lot of people get into management because they see it as, like, I suppose, a stepping stone to, like VP or something. I suppose my question is it? And, you know, you mentioned not wanting to be in sales and not knowing necessarily a job title, but for somebody who potentially wants to do something completely different, will it result in a loss of earnings? Are you not worried about that? Or I'm just trying to think, a lot of people get into management because they assume more earnings. Is there a next step after management that gives you the earnings, but not necessarily the management title.
Yeah. So I think that there is, right? There's the reality is that there'll be people that stay at sales manager level for the rest of their career and do mm-hmm. an amazing job at it. Mm-hmm. And companies will pay. It's such a crucial part of a tech company's organization, that sales manager, that companies will pay a huge amount of money for that person as long as that person's really good at their job. Mm. I saw a stat the other day that I think it's something like 50% of sales managers will end up back as an individual contributor.
Oh wow!
Within 5 years.
Wow.
Didn't actually give the specific reasons for it, but it's really interesting, right? That everyone does see, right? I've just got to progress linear. But I think specifically at tech organizations, and we've got a couple of really good examples of this at our business, is trying something new. There are a couple of people that are in VP and GM roles in the US that came from completely different backgrounds. They weren't revenue focused. They weren't typical go to market. And I think that as a tech business is probably, if you're our CEO or you're our CRO, right? Someone's ability to know your business really well and solve a problem that you've got in another part of the business is probably more exciting than getting someone that's doing that problem today, trying to solve the problem in the same way that problem's been trying to solve in the last 5 or 6 years, but having someone come in with a new mentality. So I definitely think that switching things up can be a really interesting thing as part of your career.
Nice. Tom, this has been a wonderful conversation. Time has flown by. Before we end, we do have a quick fire round.
Here we go.
I'm just going to get straight into it. Here we go. Some quick fire questions, okay? Work from home or work from the office?
Split. Down the middle. Split it down the middle.
So you're going hybrid. It wasn't an option, but you've gone for hybrid.
Sometimes you've got to make your own. You get make your own answers.
Make your own lane. Money or happiness?
Happiness.
I love that. Favourite day of the week?
Saturday morning with the kids.
Sell the dream or service the nightmare?
Neither.
He's making his own answers. Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Past.
Any reason why?
No. I'm really interested in like history.
Okay, fair. Night out or night in?
Night in. I'm too old. I'm too old for the nights out now.
Who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
Yeah.
Men have it.
Name a book you think everybody should read.
A book that I'm reading at the moment is called Amp It Up. It's by the CEO of a company called Snowflake. Yeah. It's just an amazing, amazing book. I won't ruin it for everyone, but it's about how a business can amp it up and get better without needing to bring in crazy consultants, completely change strategy by just working harder, faster, more efficiently. It's just a really, really interesting book.
That's great. I listened to a podcast and they talk about turning the knob up to level 12.
Yeah.
So that's what it sounds like they're doing.
Yeah, 100%.
Amping it up to level 12. And then the final one, are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment?
This one, of course.
Come on.
I do listen to a lot of podcasts, but I listen to, I think I was saying to you in the office the other day, I listen to just silly podcasts.
Yeah.
I really do want to get into a little bit more thoughtful thinking podcasts, maybe even while I'm cycling. But at the moment I'm, nothing particular, just a couple of clips that you see on YouTube shorts, etc.
So what my best friend does. To answer. All right, Tom. Like I said, this has been an amazing conversation. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast, and it goes a little like this. So with everything that's happened and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
Good question. What advice would I give myself? I'll answer that one, and then I'll do the next bit. So... be yourself. I throughout my career, even up until very like last night, I was messaging you about what outfit I'm going to wear,
yeah.
And then I've rocked up in a black shirt because I'm like, let me just be myself. I don't need to be anyone else. But be yourself. unapologetically be yourself, and people will like you. You don't need to. You don't always need to force anything in an interaction. Mm. So that's number one. And then number two, would I still be doing the same thing? I think I would. I think I would. I really do love what I do.
Yeah.
And I've loved what I do as a salesperson and as a sales manager. Of course, would I go back and try to, I don't know, get into something that I know now is going to work well, like esports? Would I try and get into, would I start investing in Bitcoin a lot earlier? Things like that. Of course, yes. But ultimately, I think I'd still be doing the same thing today, but I'd have tried to be myself a lot more throughout those years.
All right. So be yourself. You'd be doing the same thing. Tom, just thank you. Thank you
for having me.
Taking the time to join the podcast today, for being so open, for giving all the tidbits. You know, hopefully in 5 years' time, when this is a international podcast with millions and millions of listeners, we'll have you back on.
100%.
We'll see where you're at. We'll see what company you're dominating at. And yeah, we can have another conversation, because I really enjoyed this one today.
Yeah, me too, mate.
But yeah, for those who've made it to the end of the show, guys, thank you. This has been What My Best Friend Does with me, your host, Bio. Over and out.
Nice.
There we go. We got it.
Cool. 100%.
Tom, my man. Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What My Best Friend Does. Please make sure to like, share, comment, follow, and let me know, what other professions do you want to hear about?